This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Julian Ng. It's the last Thursday of the month, and that means it's Ringgit Ringin. In fact, this is the last Ringgit Ringin for not only the month, for the year as well. So if you have any financial questions, call us at 03-7710-9000, or you can text or WhatsApp us at 016-201-9000, or also tweet us at BFM Radio. My guest today is Joyce Chua, who's the CEO of Success Concepts. She's a certified financial planner, and also she's been on this show many times as well as writes for the financial media as well. So, Joyce, how are you all prepared for the new year?
Definitely, because I've done my financial resolutions and met all of them this year.
Excellent, excellent. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you resolved to do in 2016?
Well, for me, I want to continue doing what I have been doing well, which is to organize my financial life in an orderly manner and in a systematic set date kind of approach. What I mean is that when it comes to our financial lives, we need to look at our financial goals and our milestones every year, a set date. For example, you might want to choose your birthday, the day you got married, the day you met your boyfriend, girlfriend, that sort of thing.
So, that's good. Yes. I think that's the first step, right, to have everything organized. And before you can do anything else, you've got to sort all those things out.
Yes.
So we actually have a caller now. Let's go immediately to this call. And we have Kong Hui on the line. Good morning, Kong Hui. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning, Julian. I'd like to ask, I just turned 21 this year and I started working. So the question of life insurance policies, I just decided to buy the cheapest option that I have. I was wondering if there are better options that I may be missing out because I'm buying the cheapest one.
Now, can you just tell us how much are you paying in premiums a month?
At the moment, I'm not too sure because I'm still shopping on that. But I do realize I'm just getting the cheapest one.
Okay, so when you say cheap, do you mean cheap from the viewpoint of a premium, or is there some other factor that you're talking about that makes it cheap? Kong Hui?
Just the premium.
Just the premium, right? And what kind of coverage are you looking at?
Just the basic coverage, yes.
Okay. Right. So, Joyce, what's your response to that?
I think when we look at risk management plans, which is basically insurance-based, we should not just look at the cheapest. I mean, you've heard about the fact that you need to find out why it's cheap. Now, when you say Kong Heng, right? Kong Hui, when you mentioned that you've got just a basic life policy, the question here is this. Do you really need just a basic life policy? You know, if you're, for example, you're just 21, turning 22, and you don't have dependents and you're not married yet, I believe, what you would need more is insurance to ensure that your basic living expenses can still go on should any of the unforeseen circumstances happen. So it may not be just because it's cheap, so you get a basic life cover.
Yeah. And I think that the sky is the limit for how much you can get protected for. There are all sorts of insurance products out there that can, you know, give you the world. But the problem is that the more you spend on insurance, that takes away from the investing as well. So I think in the short term, it's a balance of coverage and investments as well, right?
Yes, but as I mentioned, what you get in your coverage is very important because a lot of us have gotten the wrong type of coverage and we've lost time over it.
For instance, what is the wrong type of coverage?
Well, wrong in inverted commas is that, for example, someone who has totally, in his case, he probably has no dependents, he's just on his own, and he needs, or probably his parents will take care of him for some time. So he doesn't really need a basic life coverage at this moment.
Not too much, at least.
Yes, not too much, because he needs to ask himself, if he were to be away from this earth tomorrow, does anyone depend on him? What's more important is, will his cash flow, the question he needs to ask is, will his cash flow be impacted should something happen to him? Will his parents' cash flow be impacted?
And this is exactly my problem with the popularity of certain child policies, because you buy insurance coverage, life coverage for the child. If something happens to the child, the child has actually no dependence, no financial dependence apart from the emotional ones. Yeah. Obviously, that's very high.
No economic value.
So the right thing to have done in those situations would have been to insure the parents, the breadwinners, rather than the child.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And then looking at another type of investment plan for the child's education. Because as I said, when time is lost, it's lost. And we come to the point where a child is going to the college, and insurance proceeds or insurance cash values are not enough to catch up with education inflation rates.
Okay, hopefully that answers the question for you, Kong Hui. Today is Ring It Ringin'. Call us at 0377109000 or text us or WhatsApp us at 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And we're going to try this out. We're going to play a voice message from WhatsApp in the form of a question.
Hi, BFM. Here is my question. I'm 22 this year, 2016, and turning to 23 next year. I've been working for over a year now, just over a year, about 1 year and 1 month plus. So, and I guess I'm earning a decent pay, all right, at my level, and I decided that I wanted to get a credit card about just a few days ago. Actually, it's yesterday that I applied for it. And immediately, actually, once I gone through the process, everything was fine. I met the requirements until they checked through Secrets report and I was rejected then. I do not have a reason why yet, but I was wondering, would you know what was the reason why I would have been rejected? I have no loans, no credit, no previous credit cards or no outstanding owings to anyone. So I was wondering, how did I still get rejected? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your question. And I guess that's the curious case of the Secrets report. What do you think, Joyce? So what can this person do about it?
Well, he mentioned that everything was all right until the Secrets report was looked into and then he was rejected. So it's really pointing to the Secrets report. However, he said that he has never had any other loans, no credit cards before. So he could be a victim of identity theft. That's one. It's scary, but it does happen. Or it could also be there are mistakes in your credit file, in your Secrets file. So I suggest that he should go to Bank Negara Malaysia on the ground floor, get your IC. It's very easy, simple. Get your identity card and you will get a report of your Secrets. Just check that everything is in place. When I mean everything is in place, it has to be all zeros. Now, this is the only time when a report has zeros, you'll be very happy about it.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, check. Usually, banks don't really want to reveal to you why they reject your credit card. It's just their policy for rejecting someone and they don't reveal it out. So it's good that you checked it on your own. Go to Bank Negara and also double check whether you had been... he's only 22, turning 23, whether he had been a guarantor. Sometimes we've forgotten that we've been guarantors to someone.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, it might not be a bad idea not to have a credit card so quickly because of all the potential for interest rate costs and finance costs and so on if you don't pay your credit card bills in time. But by the way, also, you should know that most of the ATM cards now are debit cards. So that might fulfill the function of it being... your need for a credit card.
Well, having said that, my ATM card is a debit card, but what I did with my banker is that please disable the debit part of it.
or limit transaction amounts.
That's
right. Okay. We have Joyce Chua this morning as a certified financial planner on standby here to answer a question. Let's take a quick one before we go for a break. This person says, I'm 28 years old. No debt. Resolution for 2016 was to save at least 800 ringgit a month, but now he has saved up to 15,000 ringgit in total. What should he do with the cash? And is it going to be a good idea to buy a property?
Okay, properties are very popular. It is the first thing on your mind now. The question I always ask when it comes to property is, what do you want to do with the property? Do you want to stay in it or is it for rental? Secondly, is there value in buying that property, or are you just going into the game because all your other friends have got like, you know, three or four properties and you have still got none? And thirdly, will your cash flow afford that repayment for that property? Now, my own opinion with regards to taking your first part of your savings to buy a property is not so recommended, because properties are illiquid, and I've said before, you can't sell the bedrooms, you can't sell the kitchen, only you know it's all fixed, and you know you're in for a long haul for a really huge capital outlay. I would rather that he put that aside, part of it as his emergency savings. Well, it looks like he's a saver, so he will continue to build up his emergency savings at least 3 to 6 months since
he's
young.
Monthly expenses.
Exactly, of monthly expenses. Yeah. And the rest of the money, he should actually start something more liquid. You know, he can start with, as I said before the program, let's not go into too exotic investments when we have not done the basics.
No designer furniture, someone was asking. Yeah, but you know, 150,000. Sorry, 15,000 is not a lot of money to put as a down payment for a full-fledged property. So he might have to borrow that from, get help from other people like his parents and so on. And it's probably a good idea to set up that emergency fund this year of 3 to 6 months your monthly expenses, because times are hard. You never know what's going to happen next, right? If you lose your job, at least you got those months of savings for a rainy day to help you in those bad times.
Absolutely.
Tie you through.
Yeah, and I think he should grow that money to beyond 15,000 so that he can afford something he really wants to buy, rather than limit yourself to just 15,000 worth of savings for a deposit for a house.
Yeah, but I do agree that over the long term, and this is really a long-term decision to be made, to buy the property that you're going to live in instead of going around renting places. If you can afford it, buy the property that you're going to live in, because those are one of the very few financial assets that the banks are willing to fund.
That's right. But I do have a different viewpoint towards the later parts of your life. Say, for example, you have got really, really attractive property and it's too large for you. It would be better to rent that out, get some cash out of it, and you've got probably paid that property out. And, you know, and some people actually just rent, you know. So that's towards the other part of your financial life. But at the beginning, yes, buy it for your own home.
Okay, you're listening to Ring It and Sense, and it's Ring It Ringing today, where you can call in with your financial questions. And our guest today is Joyce Chua, CEO of Success Concepts, as well as a certified financial planner. We'll be back with more questions after this, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Ring It and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance, and I'm Julian Ng. And today, it's Ring It Ringing. Call in to us at 0377-109-1000 or text us or WhatsApp us at 0162-019-1000. We have Joyce Chua, CEO of Success Concepts and also a licensed financial planner, here to answer your question. Then, Joyce, we have an interesting question here about traveling, and this person says that he has a few trips overseas next year. Are there steps that he or she can take to minimize exposure to the weakening ringgit?
Interesting. My first answer to that is don't go.
Don't go. Well, that's a very drastic solution, right, to curb your love for travel.
Right. I'm not sure whether it's on business or for holidays, but whatever it is, if he has to go, I think one of the things I do when I go overseas is that I use a foreign debit card, a foreign currency debit card. For example, I have a credit card, or rather the debit card, in Singapore dollars.
And oh, okay. How do you get that?
You just open a... You can just go to Singapore, open a credit card.
Just go to Singapore, okay.
Yeah, not a credit card. I mean a bank account, and they will give you a credit card or a debit card. It's just like an ATM.
So you can't do that here, right? There are no facilities here yet for foreign currency deposits and accounts.
Actually, honestly, I did that through my own personal private banker here. She applied it for me through the same bank. I won't mention which one.
Yeah.
And she did it. She sent my documents to Singapore and everything was done. The card was couriered to me. I didn't even have to go to Singapore.
Okay. So, but that would still mean that you would have to put foreign currency into that account so absolutely. That you can spend your foreign currencies overseas. The question is, When you buy into foreign currencies, you're still making a bet for or against the ringgit.
Exactly.
Right?
So no one can really tell you when's the best time to get to buy a certain currency. So he's still got a year. I'm not sure when he travels, but you know what he should do is then buy in when the ringgit is stronger or the other currency is weaker. So buy it over a few tranches, and you just then accumulate a certain amount of money. I don't have tons of money in that foreign currency account. It's enough for my spending when I go overseas. So when I use the Singapore dollars or a foreign currency denominated card, it is better than if I had used my own credit card, which then I'll be slapped with a credit card charge and a very bad currency exchange. You know, so accumulate your currencies over time. You know, tomorrow I'm going overseas, don't just buy today.
So is there a longer-term perspective to this issue of the weakening currency? Because you can take that measure to be globally invested so that the bulk of your investments are in already a diversified global portfolio. Will that help us forget the problems of the weakening ringgit, right? Because we have the bulk of the assets invested in a global portfolio.
Yeah. Going global in your investments may also, it may actually cost you more, because it could also be the fact that they have a minimum investment. And, you know, for young people, they may not be able to start global investments, of course, except for unit trust investments, which is globally exposed.
Or some of the ETFs, actually.
Or some of the ETFs, yeah. You're right. And you also need skills in order to set up a portfolio, because emotions do come into portfolio management, and you need to be able to manage that. So in order to forget, as you said, the problem of the
ringgit, to insulate us from that problem.
Yeah, one is of course definitely to have your portfolio exposed to global instruments, and before you do that, you need to understand how they work, because global markets and Asian markets can be more volatile than Malaysian markets. If you look at the Malaysian markets, it hasn't really moved very much, but Asian markets are very exposed to a lot of factors globally, and it can be very sensitive. So know what you're investing in, understand where it is. I think the second thing is, if you don't want to even go into a portfolio that's overseas because of no experience, or I just don't have enough money to go into overseas investments, then make sure that you grow your money in Malaysia above the rise of the other currencies that you're looking at. For example, against the US. If the US has strengthened by 5% or 6% this year, then you need to make sure that your monies in Malaysia grow more than that.
Exactly.
FDs are no longer the answer. Neither are bonds sometimes.
Absolutely. All right. Let's take another question. And remember, when you WhatsApp in, please do sign off with a name. We like to put a name to your message. And there is a question here. What is the recommended basic passive income to enable us to retire with a basic lifestyle? Joyce, I'm sure this is a very oft-asked question that come your way.
Yeah, but it's really very general. Basic passive income will need to cover basically the basic expenses. So what are your basic expenses, right? And it also depends on where you live, what kind of lifestyle you have. So in Klang Valley, in Petaling Jaya, we're looking at least probably 2,005 a month. So and so if you... Not enough, right? Probably 3,000-4,000. Yeah. I'm not sure. It really depends on your lifestyle. I mean, do you go to hipster cafes? Then you actually need to add another $1,000. So if it's $3,000, then you want a passive income, then work backwards. Where are you intending to put your capital? If it's FD, then you just take the FD, what do you call that? If it's $3,000, it's $36,000 a year. You take $36,000 a year, divide by $3,000. How much is that? And then you then know that that's the amount you should have
in order to retire. Backwards. There are a lot of financial calculators out there, including one that was provided by EPF recently. You can plug in all the information that you have, and EPF, in fact, the retirement calculator will tell you how much you need by the time you retire to fund the kind of lifestyle that you have. Now, we still have some time to answer a few more questions. Let's take this one. My son will turn 21 in February next year, and I'm keen to sign him up for PRS. Can Joyce share some info on it and how the person can get it done? And this is from Lonnie.
Okay.
Thanks, Lonnie, for your question.
Well, she can actually look for me.
Wonderful.
Well, because we are also PRS licensed consultants. Now, yes, that's great, because when you start your son young at 21 years old, which is actually the age you one can a Malaysian can be eligible for the youth incentive. So what she can do is to set aside as a gift, perhaps on his 21st birthday, $1,000 rather than buy himself maybe an expensive guitar or something like that. Just, you know, $1,000 won't get you a good guitar, but
no
give
way.
Him a $1,000 as something that he can start off with so that he gets a matching of that $1,000
by the government.
What is
the top-up amount by the government?
That is a one-to-one match, i.e. up to $1,000 of investment into a PRS scheme.
So only up to 1,000 ringgit, not 5,000 or 10,000 ringgit.
No, okay. I wish, yes.
So that's 100% return already, right off the bat.
Amazing, yes.
Yeah. Okay, we have one last we don't have a last question. The person is still typing on WhatsApp. But Joyce, just before we go, quick thoughts on your financial resolutions for 2017.
Well, I mentioned one was organize my financial lives or our financial lives consistently. Two, I would say that please let us all stop living dual financial lives. I won't go into the explanation. You know what it means. Living dual lives, Dr. Jekyll and Hyde sort of thing in your financial life. And number three, don't take time for granted. We are living this year, 2016, and we're going into 2017. 1 year's gone. It's really fast. So don't take time for granted. So what you need to do next year, stop analyzing, stop thinking, start doing.
Okay, wise words indeed. And thank you so much for joining us. And
thank
that you. Was Joyce Chua, CEO and licensed financial planner from Success Concepts, joining us in this version of Ring It, Ring In. And we want to wish you a happy new year and a productive financial year ahead, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.